Overhead Door Company, the original garage door company, serving you for over 90 years. Call 843-767-0028 or overheaddoorco.com. Overhead Door Company of Charleston, proud to open hour two of the Morrow Midday Show.
This is the Morrow Midday Show.
But wait, there's more.
On ESPN Radio.
Yes, it's back again. Sadie's back. Tell a friend. Guess who's back.
Second hour of the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. We'll circle back to the college football playoff rankings coming up. Get to some of the NFL stuff. Sam Darnold's injury with the Panthers. Plenty to do over the next few hours. Start to look ahead to the Gamecocks game at Missouri this weekend. But college basketball tipped off last night, and nobody got a bigger win in night one than your Citadel Bulldogs going up to Pittsburgh and beating an ACC team by 15, leading for 39 minutes. An impressive win to start the season for the Citadel. And joining us now, the head coach of the Bulldogs from an airport as they still make it back to Charleston. Coach Bauckham's with us. Coach, good afternoon. How are you?
Hey, Luke. Doing great. How about you, buddy?
Doing well. Appreciate the time since I know you guys are still traveling. But, man, what a win last night against Pittsburgh. I imagine you couldn't draw up a better start to a season than what you guys did last night.
No, it was a great night. I'm so proud of the kids. A lot of smiles today traveling through the airports, but they competed for 40 minutes last night. As you said, we led 39 minutes of the game, and guys just fought the whole night. So proud of them.
Yeah, and rightfully so. Their coach had some great comments about your team afterwards. As you said, led for 39 minutes. He jumped out to like a 14-2 start. So was it that first media timeout when you saw, like, hey, you know what? We're playing really well tonight. We match up well. We you know, this is our night. Did you know early on?
Yeah, you know, we huddled up after the first four, and the guys had that belief in their eyes, and they were talking each other up, and the bench was into it, and all the coaches were into it, and every media, it just, you know, kept getting, confidence kept growing and growing, and guys just kept believing. We went in at halftime up 12, and we told them at halftime, hey, just beware, for the next 4 minutes going to be the toughest basketball you've played in your life, and just make it through that first media. And we got to the first media, still up 12, so just kept trying. And at that point, you just break it down into 5 4-minute games, and I told them if we keep winning medias, we're going to win this game, and they held me to it. They just kept battling.
Yeah, never slipped up, led by double digits for most of the game, led for the last 39 minutes. You've done this before. You went to Kentucky and beat them. So for this game last night, I imagine it stacks up there as one of your one of the more memorable victories for you?
Well, it certainly was, and for the kids especially. I had never coached and won a game against an ACC team, and none of these kids had ever beat an ACC team. So that was pretty special. Anytime you went on the road, as you know, you've been with us, it's really, really special. But to go in a nice arena like they have at Pitt, going against a big-time coach like Jeff Capel and pulling that off and literally just playing great. I mean, playing well from start to finish and very few lulls. So it ranked right up there, I will say.
Did you make sure you guys got your milkshakes last night to celebrate the win?
Mm-hmm. We did. You know that. It's a ritual. So we were staying downtown Pittsburgh, so had to go to, I think it's called the Fudge Factory, to get everybody their milkshake orders. But we had on some Penn Station subs and had on some milkshakes, and everybody still got in bed at a decent hour. Everybody was up at breakfast this morning at 7, and we took off for the airport at 8:15. Went to Pittsburgh to Atlanta. We're in Atlanta now, and we'll get back into Charleston hopefully about 3:30.
Yeah, long day, but I'm sure it helps when you get a win like that last night. Before we let you go, Coach, I do have to ask you about your freshman, Jason, last night, who had 27 points, made 8 threes. I mean, you can't have a much better debut as a freshman against especially an ACC team. That was impressive last night from Jason.
Well, thank you. How about that? He You know, last year this time he was in prep school and they didn't even have a season. And he's from California. His dad was able to make it into the game and, you know, made his first two. And we've seen him in practice enough to know when he gets going, he gets going. And he got fouled on another three, so he made all three free throws for his 27 points. But and credit some of my bigs. I mean, we call them grenade screens, but they just kind of dribbled at him and handed it back to him, and he was shooting right off their hand. And they did a great job in finding him. And he hit one. The coup de grace, I guess, is we were up probably 12 and ran the shot clock all the way down, and he hit one from about 28 feet from the top of, you know, above the top of the key, and that kind of ended it. But just happy for him. First, I told him he got a lot to live up to now. And then you fooled your coaches. We know it's in you, so we expect a lot of that. But couldn't be happier for him. And he had several other freshmen, JP, Jackson Price, he played 10 minutes for us, and Owen Spencer played 8 minutes for us. He's only a sophomore. Brady Spence is back like the Brady Spence you saw 2 years ago. So they were huge, Luke. So we had to throw a lot of bigs at them. I think we threw 16 fouls at them from our bigs.
Yeah, their whole starting five is 6'5 or taller. So, I mean, they had a big team last night. You guys were able to handle them. Last thing, Coach, Permane Brothers, is it as good as advertised, those sandwiches?
So Amber went for a walk yesterday morning. She said, I saw this cooler sandwich place. We need to go there. I was a little skeptical to go there for pregame. I let the guys eat with the coaches. I give them time away from me. So we went. It is unbelievable. I thought I was out of my comfort zone there for a minute, but it was amazing. Best French fries I've had in a long, long time.
Oh, man. Well, Coach, congratulations on the win last night. Fantastic win. You had the college basketball world talking about you again. Big-time win. Get home safe, and we'll see you Friday at McAllister Fieldhouse for your home opener against Morris College. Appreciate you.
Hey, thanks, Luke. Can't wait to see you, man, and I'll see you at noon on Friday, okay?
Absolutely. Looking forward to it, Coach. Appreciate the time. Take care.
All right. Thanks for having us on. Bye-bye.
Hey, our pleasure. Coach Bauckham, you win a game like that, of course. Have you come on and talk about it and some Permane Brothers sandwiches. I know they got to board a flight. He said he's got about they're flying out in about 30 minutes, so I don't want to keep him too long. But a big-time win last night. I really was, and this isn't hyperbole, it's not because I'm the voice of the city. Go back and look at all the games last night. It probably was maybe the second biggest, because you know what? Navy beat a ranked Virginia team last night. And since Virginia is ranked, they are better than Pittsburgh. So I'll give Navy, if we're giving out stars, you know, at the end of a hockey game, you give out like your 3 stars, your best player, 2 stars, whatever they do after hockey games. If we were doing that for college basketball last night, Navy would take the top spot. They beat a ranked Virginia team on the road. And then the Citadel's probably number two. Navy beat Virginia. That was the first win for Navy last night against a ranked team since David Robinson was on the team in 1986. That was the last time Navy beat a ranked team. 1986. For the Citadel, all sorts of numbers about what they accomplished last night. It was the first win against a Power 5 team, and that's a term we use more in football, but if you apply it to college basketball, it's the first win for the Citadel against a Power 5 team since 1989 when they beat South Carolina. It was the first win against a team that's currently in the ACC since 1979 when they beat Clemson. It snapped a 46-game losing streak against ACC teams that win last night. By the way, also the first time Pittsburgh has ever lost to a Southern Conference team. They were previously 9-0. And then, maybe most impressive of it all, was that for the Bulldogs, that was their first victory against a Power 5 team that was not from this state since 1971. It had been over 50 years, right? Their wins had come against Clemson and South Carolina, but the last time they beat a different Power 5 team, you have to go back to January of 1971 when they beat Texas A&M. Things were a lot different back then, 50 years ago. Now, there's a bigger gap, I would say, between some of those programs like that. Big-time win last night. And the last historical reference I'll give you is for the Bulldogs to take it one step further. Their last road victory against an ACC team was 1969. So it's been even longer. So what they accomplished last night, going on the road, beating an ACC team on the road, that hadn't happened in over 52 years. That's how big of a win it was last night for the Citadel, to try to put that in perspective. And the way that they rolled. Right now, I told you yesterday on the show, they're only a 9-point underdog. Vegas thought it would be close. And I have never bet on the Citadel, and I never will, for any team I work for. You know, I know I'm not the manager. I'm not Pete Rose here, but I just think professionally, you keep those two things separate. You don't bring betting, you know, gambling into your professional life in that sense. I know we talk about gambling here, but that's part of this industry and this world. When it comes to the playback, you know, I keep it separate. I never will gamble on the teams I work with, never gamble for or against them. I stay away just to keep it separate. But I told a friend texted me yesterday and said, you know, oh, who do you like in college basketball tonight? He was looking for some advice. And I'll be honest with you, I did text him back. I got the text to show you. I said, take the Citadel tonight, 10.5-point underdog against Pittsburgh. Sure enough, he didn't, and I texted him afterwards, and I said, you should have listened to me. But I thought they stood a chance against that Pittsburgh team, and then they went out, and we tipped off the game, and the Citadel, they led 14-2. And I thought, wait a minute. Like, hold on. I thought they'd be able to compete. I thought it'd be an interesting game. I never forecasted a 14-2 start. They led for 39 minutes. I mean, the Citadel really, they controlled that game. For most of that game, they even dominated. They led by double digits for the majority of the game. It was a really impressive win. And no, Pittsburgh's not going to be very good this year, but they're still an ACC team. As Coach said, they're big. Their whole starting five is 6'5 or taller. Their point guard's as big as the Citadel's power forward. The Citadel, they don't get kids that can go play for Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh has all, it's like when we always have these conversations about the NFL versus college football. Could Georgia beat the worst NFL team? No. Because not all the guys on Georgia are going to go to the NFL, but all the guys on the NFL team are good enough to go to the NFL. It's the same thing. Everybody on Pittsburgh is good enough to play in the ACC. All due respect to the Citadel, they got a good roster, but you know, I don't know, maybe Hayden Brown. Otherwise, you know, I don't know how many of those guys are going to play in the ACC, get real minutes. But when they go on the same floor together last night, you couldn't tell the difference. And the Citadel beat them up for 40 minutes. Beat them by 15, 78-63. Big-time win for the Bulldogs last night. And already, one night into college basketball, we had some chaos. Virginia loses. Pittsburgh loses. Clemson was losing for most of the game against Presbyterian. They turned it on in the second half to win. South Carolina had a little bit of an easier victory, but it was already a bit of a chaotic night in college basketball last night. A little bit of a tough night for the ACC. Georgia Tech lost to Miami of Ohio at home, so that wasn't good. So a little bit of a tough night for the ACC last night. Virginia already lost. They'll be unranked. Duke beat Kentucky. Kansas won at MSG. Chaotic first night in college basketball. Speaking of which, when we come back, let's focus a little bit on college basketball for a moment, because they passed something in the NCAA that could change March Madness as we know it moving forward. We'll get to that when we come back. It's the Morrow Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
You're listening to the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Coming up, a change in college basketball that could affect March Madness moving forward. Get to that here on the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow on ESPN Radio. Did you ever try to memorize these lyrics, Joe, back when the song maybe first came out?
Well, see, I was a senior in high school, and I'd already been through most of those history classes. So.
Oh, look at you. Do you think Billy Joel...
I could just enjoy the song for what it was.
Do you think he plays this in concert? I feel like this would be a very difficult song to, like, even remember the lyrics and perform. I've seen him in concert. He didn't play this. I feel like that would be a tough song to have to go out there and remember all the words and get it all right and do it that quickly. And it's like, I love the song Home by the Sea by Phil Collins, or by Genesis. That was another one. He said it was so hard to sing. They never really performed it live. This is one of those that I think you kind of put in the back burner. Yeah, we're just not going to play that one. That's too difficult. The Citadel got a big win last night. Appreciate Coach Buckham taking some time out from the airport to join us. They always get milkshakes on the road after a win. And I don't think there are any cookouts around Pittsburgh. That's a go-to spot when around the road, either Cookout or Sonic. I don't think they have those in Pittsburgh, but as he said, they found them last night. They had their milkshakes. Coach even got his first ever Gatorade bath. They got him with Gatorade as he went into the locker room after the win. Big-time win for the Citadel. I mean, it starts the season, right? That's even bigger. Now, let me be a little self-indulging. Here's how it sounded. We always like to bring you some sound throughout college basketball. I have a couple of other buzzer-beater calls from last night, but here's how it sounded for the Citadel, the end of the game, as the Citadel beat Pittsburgh last night for their first win against an ACC team since 1979.
Pittsburgh will not intentionally foul. They're going to come with pressure, trying to get some steals. Moff with a 50-50 ball to midcourt that's pulled away by Roach. Pulls up, top of the key, hits another three. And there's the exclamation point for the Bulldogs. The freshman with 27 points to lead all scorers tonight has eight threes, and the Bulldogs lead by 17. 78-61, final 12 seconds. Pittsburgh with the basketball. Turnaround shot good for Oladapo in the lane. And the Bulldogs will inbound it, let the final 5 seconds tick off. And this one belongs to the Bulldogs. They open their season with a road win against Pittsburgh, 78-63. And it's the Citadel's first win against a Power 5 team since 1989. The Bulldogs led for all but 60 seconds tonight. And in the process, snap a 46-game losing streak to the ACC. It's their first win against this conference since the 70s, and a big-time win for the Bulldogs on the road to open their season tonight.
There you go. That's how it sounded on the Citadel Radio Network. By the way, their home opener will be Friday for the Citadel, and it'll be right here on ESPN Radio. Tips off at noon. Coverage will begin at 11:30 a.m. for the Bulldogs back in action. Hey, after that win last night, you're going to want to come out and see this team. In fact, I think we got tickets to give away. I got all sorts of tickets I got to try to give away here for the next couple of days for some college basketball in the area. And we have some tickets for a Friday matinee for that one, the Citadel at home in their home opener on Friday, which will be heard right here Friday starting at 11:30.
Right, that'll be a little bit different because yes, you're usually heard on our sister station, The City,
yeah,
102.1 FM and 1450 AM.
Right.
And that's also where we get most of our bumper music from,
yes,
from their playlist.
That's right. So we're not going to bump them off there Friday, since I'm usually on the air 12 to 3 anyways. We figured, well, we'll just put the game here in place of the Morrow Midday Show. So if you normally listen to the show, Friday you can hang out with some Citadel hoops. It's what we call crossover season here in the industry. This is not me complaining because I love what I do. But I realized I did the math driving in today. I'm going to be on the air for 24 hours this week talking. So you probably are going to get tired of this voice if you aren't real soon. I got to make sure I get my tea in me. But 24 hours doesn't sound like a lot over the week, but then you figure that's one day. That'd be like, you know, Bobby's doing his 12-hour radiothon. It'd be like if you sat there and just talked for 24 hours. You spent one day of your week just talking on the radio. But fortunately, as they tell you, do what you love and you never work a day in your life, and that's still true for me. I have yet to work a day in my life. Actually, maybe when I worked in that concession stand for a minor league team all those years ago, that felt like work. But otherwise, it's been nothing but a joy. And last night, I had nothing to do with it, but it was just a fun game to broadcast because it was a big-time win for the Citadel. And when you get to broadcast a game like that, it's nice. It's nice to broadcast a nice win for the team. You realize how big it is for those guys, for the coaches, and you're happy for them to pull off something like that. Big win for the Bulldogs last night. You can always join the conversation, 843-721-9500, to give us a call. Let's go to the phones. Jim is with us. Jim, what's going on? How are you?
How you doing, sir? Hey, I'm going to tell you something. I just heard that call you replayed.
Yeah.
It sounded a lot like Bob Costas, I'm telling you. Boy.
Well, that's
you
very kind.
You are a celebrity, brother. I'd like to get your autograph sometime.
Oh,
wow.
Yeah.
Bigger
yeah.
and better things ahead, I'll tell you that. That was impressive, that call.
Well,
really
thank
was.
You. I appreciate the kind words. Thank you.
And the only reason why you talked to the coach in the airport, it wasn't about the game. You knew it. He knew it. Everything else. We all knew it from what you shared. You wanted to know about the sandwich.
Of course.
That sandwich is so big. I think you're almost willing to drive to Pittsburgh for the weekend sometime and get you one of those sandwiches. I told you I lived there. It was my favorite. But you have to, and Bobby Harton says differently, you embarrass me on the show, say, you don't get an Iron City Light. You got to get an Iron City Light, just one, and try an Iron City Light with that sandwich. Now, by the way, I don't mean to patronize anybody locally, but Steel City Pizza does have Iron City Light. And I think they might be able to put together a sandwich like that, okay?
All right.
I'm not being quoted on it. I'm just letting you know, so maybe we should do that sometime, okay?
Absolutely. Yes, please. We'll have to look into that and see if they can put it together. Appreciate the kind words. Appreciate it, Jim. For Coach, I wanted to hear about the milkshakes and also the sandwiches because I do have to be honest, I had what they call FOMO, right? Fear of missing out. And it wasn't because of the game. I would have loved to have been there in person last night. If you listened to the show yesterday, you knew that I didn't make this trip. I will be on the road with the team the rest of the season, but couldn't go with them to Pittsburgh this week, unfortunately. Would have been great to be there in person for that game. But more importantly, yeah, I was looking forward to the sandwiches. And then once they won, I was thinking, oh, man, I'm missing out on the milkshakes. I had to go drive to Cookout myself to go get my own celebratory milkshake. But, yeah, that's what I was most curious in. Big-time win for the Citadel last night. And also, they ate pretty good. They got some good food up there in Pittsburgh the last couple of days that I did miss out on. It's not easy calling a game from the studio on a TV. So I'm looking forward to back on the road with the Bulldogs this season the rest of the way. Appreciate the kind words. We always like to bring you some sound from throughout the sports world. So it was a chaotic opening night in college basketball last night, which did feature what we would call essentially two buzzer beaters. One was actually at the buzzer. One was with about 2 seconds left. Here was Wichita State needing essentially a buzzer beater just to get past Jacksonville State last night. Here's how it sounded on Wichita State radio.
Etienne walking it up. 11 on the shot. 11 on the clock. Game clock. Etienne one-on-one against Jalen Gibbs. Going to try to make a play. 4 seconds. Long three. Good! That was 30 feet. Etienne for about 30 feet with 1.6 seconds to go. Finch from beyond half court. No good, and the Shockers have won it.
Wichita State needing an NBA range three to get past Jacksonville State last night. And then there was Ohio State, which was in a dogfight with Akron, and it came down to the very end. Ohio State needed a buzzer beater just to survive in their opener last night. Here's how it sounded on Ohio State radio.
2 seconds left. Buckeyes down a point. Arnes on the right side looking inbound. Gets it Branham. Top of the key. Dumps it to Zed Key. Up to the hoop. Lays it in! At the buzzer, Zed Key right at the rim. Gives Ohio State a game winner at point blank range.
That was Ohio State radio last night. Now that is a voice. That guy's got a good set of pipes. Ohio State winning at the buzzer against Akron. So we had some crazy games last night. Virginia loses to Navy. Pittsburgh loses to the Citadel. And then you had some close calls. Wichita State, which is usually a very good, you know, what I guess what you would call a group of five. We really don't use those terms in college basketball so much. But they would be, I guess, a group of one of the better group of five teams. And then Ohio State, of course, coming down to the very end with Akron. Speaking of college basketball, this is something that really has gone kind of unreported. And maybe because it's not going to come to fruition. But Bob Huggins, longtime college basketball coach, said that the major conferences should ditch the NCAA tournament and make their own event. And there was some legislation that even got passed already through the NCAA that I'm not going to get bogged down in the details, but the idea is essentially that it will allow the conferences to kind of go separate. You know, like the playoff is operated not by the NCAA in football. Really, in football, it's more about the conferences that are running the show. It's not so much the NCAA. And in college basketball, these major conferences would like to have the same thing. They want the control. They don't want the NCAA running March Madness. They want to go do their own thing, where they would remove all of those mid-majors and would just be the group of five, I would imagine, those same five conferences that would do their own thing, go separately, kind of like what we're talking about in college football about a group of five and a power five. You know, like Cincinnati, you go have your own championship, and we will have these power five conferences compete for the normal playoff in college football. And so this is just like an idea or a thought process right now. I don't know if we'll ever get to this point, but there's at least this thought. There's this idea for some in college basketball that are saying, hey, we're better off going on our own and ditching these smaller programs. Bob Huggins said those Cinderella schools are putting 200 people at best in their gym. We're putting 14,000. That's kind of condescending, right? 200 people at best. Come on. You know that these no Division I school is drawing only 200 people. So that's a little like really looking down on these teams. By the way, these teams that can beat you every once in a while, as we saw last night in college basketball. But my whole thing in all this is that I think for college football, you wouldn't notice a difference if we did have that split. And if you had the group of five and the power five, I actually think it would be better. Because right now, the group of five doesn't stand a chance. But in basketball, as we know, it's different.
Now, they may not go win the actual national championship, but we've seen a Chicago Loyola get to the Final Four. Years ago, right, Butler was able to get to back-to-back. We've had like a George Mason. We've had teams that at least make it to the Sweet 16, if not the Final Four. Do they often win the national championship? No, not really. You know, UNLV, you have to go back 30 years ago to UNLV for like the last time. They usually don't go all the way, but they're good enough to get pretty far, where you're not watching these tournaments and thinking like, oh, they need to go have their own tournament. They can't compete. And I think the great thing about March Madness, which is the best postseason, is the Cinderellas. Ratings go down every week of the tournament, every week, every round of the NCAA tournament. And then you get to the national championship, the Final Four, you know, and then people will tune in. But the opening round is watched by more people than the Sweet 16. Because what are you looking for? It's why you fill out a bracket. It's why you call in sick on Thursday and go to the bar all day. You're looking for the upsets. It's what people tune in for. So I think March Madness would really suffer, or college basketball, because I don't know if they would still call it March Madness. I mean, I guess you would, even if it's not the same thing anymore. But college basketball would really suffer if this ever came to fruition. If this idea, and I don't know how serious it is, or if we're really looking at something like this in the near future, or this is all just pie in the sky, but I think it would be a bad idea for college basketball to try to split apart. College football, yeah, you know what? I'd be honest with you, it's probably better. Probably be better off if you took, like, UTSA right now, right? If they actually had a chance to go compete for their own national championship in the group of five. Instead, otherwise, they're having a great season. Yeah, they got ranked last night. That was like their championship. They got ranked 25th in the playoff poll. They're thinking, wow, we made it. You know, that's what you shoot for, where they should be able to go compete for an actual national championship. In college basketball, though, we see it every year, but these upsets, these teams can compete. And they can get some of those wins, and they can have their big moment. And I think that's what makes March Madness great. What makes college football's playoff great is that I've always said we have gotten a true champion every year. College basketball, maybe that's not always the case. It's probably not the best way to try to determine a true champion of the sport, but it is the most entertaining, the most interesting. You have average sports fans get involved with brackets. They're watching the games. And even at work, you're talking about it. Oh, what's going on in that game? Who's winning that game if you're stuck at work that day? And that's all because of those Cinderellas. Otherwise, it's just a conference tournament. And we don't have the same care about the conference tournaments, right? Because of the conference tournaments, you get down to the best teams of the conference, theoretically, in the Final Four. And in those conferences, if you only focused on the Power Five conferences, those would be the same teams. You don't care about the conference tournament unless your team's making a run, right? Otherwise, we don't have the same attention to, like, ooh, the SEC, the two best teams in the SEC are playing one another. You don't care so much. But you'll get more excited over Bradley beating Kansas in March Madness. So I would just say, kind of be careful what you wish for or ask for. You know, these programs, I know they have the power. And what it comes down to in the end is the money, right? They just don't want to split the money with these other teams. That's the issue for Bob Huggins. That's what he's saying. They only have 200 people come to their games. We have 14,000, and we're splitting our revenue with them from the tournament. That's crazy. Like most conversations, it always comes back to money. But be careful. With your greed, looking for more money, you're going to, I think, severely hurt the product in the process. Getting back to college football, you know, last night was the opener of college basketball, so I wanted to spend some time on that, especially with the win for the Citadel. But when we come back, something similar that we'll look at for both the NFL and college football. Concerns for the college football contenders. And when we come back, we'll look at the NFL. Seven favorites lost this past weekend. Some teams that we thought were some of the best in the NFL had some bad losses this past weekend. How many of those losses were just outliers? They simply had a bad day. How many of those losses were some sort of blueprint that exposed these teams? We'll get to that when we come back. It's the Morrow Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
Now back to the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
NFL teams that loss this past weekend should we actually be concerned over? It's the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. College of Charleston begins their basketball season tomorrow night with the Rising Coaches Classic at TD Arena. So they play tomorrow, Friday, and Saturday. Busy weekend of hoops for the College of Charleston. We have tickets to give away for all three of those games. And then they're also home Tuesday against UNC, which is sold out. So they start with four home games over the next 6 days. Busy start to the year for the College of Charleston. We'll be giving away tickets the rest of, the next 2 days, because we got Citadel basketball. We won't be on the air Friday. So I'm just realizing now we better give these tickets out. So we'll do it today and tomorrow. Give away some tickets for the College of Charleston, their games, tomorrow, Friday, and Saturday. So stay tuned for that. We got to give these tickets away, and we got to do it pretty quick, later on this afternoon and tomorrow as well. And I also have Citadel tickets, too, if you want to come out and join me Friday for the game. Not literally. You can't sit with me. Sorry. But I'll give you tickets to the game for Friday for the Citadel. We have those tickets to give away, too. It's a noon tip-off Friday afternoon, which you'll be able to hear right here instead of the Morrow Midday Show Friday starting at 11:30. So we got plenty of tickets. It's basketball season. We got plenty of tickets to give away. We'll do that coming up. For the NFL, we have gone through a stretch here where the underdogs have won straight up more than they've lost. They're over 500 the last 2 weeks. It's the first time it's happened in back-to-back weeks where underdogs have won more games than the favorites in back-to-back weeks. It's the first time it's happened in, like, decades. And for the NFL, when you look at this past weekend in particular, seven favorites lost. And the question is always, how concerned should you be? One of the cliches of the Morrow Midday Show is that the NFL is a week-to-week business. You can have a bad loss 1 week, come back, play great football the next. The Jets can beat the Titans, right? And then the Titans come back and run off five straight wins against mostly playoff teams from a year ago, and now they have the best record in football. And you could point to, well, what about when they lost to the Jets? It was just a bad week. And they just didn't play. Bad matchup. They didn't play well. So you have to be careful when you look at some of these losses. You wonder, is this a problem, or is this just simply a bad matchup, bad week? You know, maybe they had a bunch of penalties. They turned it over three times. If they played again, they probably wouldn't lose that game. You have to provide some context, dig into these games a little bit. There can be some gray area. So I figured, let's take the seven favorites that lost on Sunday, and I'll also even throw in the Steelers. The Steelers won on Monday Night Football, right? But against a rookie quarterback at home, it came down to the last second field goal. As I was watching that game, I was thinking, this is going to be another favorite that goes down. So maybe you were a little concerned with that Steelers game on Monday. I figured we'll throw them in as well. So I got those eight teams from this past week, and I even ordered them in terms of level of concern. Let's run through this. Number one, therefore, the team I would be most concerned coming out of this weekend would be actually the New Orleans Saints, who lost to the Falcons. And the concern would be Trevor Siemian played well in that fourth quarter to come back, give the Saints a lead, looked like they were going to win. But that's the big issue. My concern with this team going into the year was quarterback. Now you're down to your third string, Trevor Siemian, who's decent, but there's a reason why he's never really been, you know, he was a starting quarterback for a little while in Denver, lost his job, wasn't given another opportunity. He is a backup quarterback. But now you're relying on that backup quarterback to try to get you to the playoffs. We'll see how much they use Taysom Hill as he works his way back into the lineup. And I know he won some games last year, but I don't think Taysom Hill is a good enough quarterback to lead you either. And if you don't have the quarterback, you don't have much. Even as good as the Saints' defense is, and there's rumors about OBJ and this and that, if you're relying on Trevor Siemian, sorry, that's an issue. And so the final score looked a lot better for the Saints, but with about 10 minutes to go, they had 6 points on Sunday against a pretty below-average Falcons defense. So coming out of this weekend, I'm actually most concerned about the Saints because I don't think you can rely on Trevor Siemian. Number two on the list would be the Bengals. And number three would be the Raiders. And these two are the same to me. My concern for each would be that their start was a little flukish. That's the concern. For Cincinnati, they lose to the Jets. And as I was just saying with the Titans, you could think, well, that's just one bad week. But then they follow that up at home, losing by 25 to the Browns. And the Browns were coming off a bad loss too. And you think, ooh, back-to-back bad losses, that's not a good sign. And now the Bengals are just hovering over 500. And you kind of forget about that quick start. Because nobody expected that quick start. So is this a regression to the mean for Cincinnati? I think it may be. Joe Burrow's really good, but he still has some costly turnovers. He's a young quarterback. When they lost to the Bears earlier this year, he had three interceptions in the second half. right, when they lost to the Browns this past weekend. The Bengals were moving the football. They just couldn't take care of it. He had a couple of costly interceptions. That's the concern for me with Cincinnati. Good team, but it's still young. Your star receiver is a rookie. Your head coach is a first-time coach, third year, hasn't won anything, you know, still in his 30s. Your quarterback is in his second year, and he didn't play all of last year because of an injury. It's just a young team. I don't think they're quite ready just yet, even with that quick start. Similar for the Raiders, who I put in that same area. That the Raiders went to New York and went 1-for-6 in the red zone, lost on the road to the Giants. As I've been saying over the past week or two, I was waiting for all this stuff to catch up to the Raiders. I think it has. I think the Raiders will still be all right. But they're not the best team in that division like they were playing for the first month and a half. And I think, I've been saying this for a while, I've been calling my shot eventually, I hope I'm right, I think you'll start to see a little bit of a slide for the Raiders. A bit of a regression to the mean for them as well. So I put them and the Bengals in the same category, and those are 2 and 3 on my list. Then we get to the Steelers, who I'd put number 4. The Steelers won the game against the Bears. But my concern would be that for Pittsburgh, they haven't won a game when allowing 30 points since December of 2017. It's been almost 4 years. And you may think, oh, you know, so what? How often do teams win? Sometimes you have to win a shootout. The Bengals haven't been able to. The Steelers haven't been able to. The last 36 wins for Pittsburgh, they have held their opponents under 30 points. Now, that's impressive for the defense, and they do have a good defense once again this year. It's not too often that they allow over 30 points in a game because their defense is that good. But what the concern is for Pittsburgh is that they can't get to a shootout. They can only win one type of way. And if their defense doesn't show up, they're in big trouble. For other teams that have a really good defense, right, sometimes the offense can kick it into high gear. Sometimes you have to rely on another aspect of your team. Your defense will pick up your offense. Your offense will pick up your defense. The Steelers are 1-12 in their last 13 games when they allow 30 points. They don't win shootouts because they don't have the quarterback anymore that can compete in those shootouts in Ben Roethlisberger. He's not the same guy he once was. They have to play low scoring, drag it out, run the football, time of possession type of games, play a defensive battle. When they beat the Browns last week, it was 15-10. But that's a tough way to continue to win consistently in the NFL. Credit to the Steelers. They've done it for 4 years, but then they get to the playoffs. The Steelers have lost 3 straight playoff games. They've allowed 30 points or more in all 3 of those games. So you can rely on this defense to get you only so far. That's my concern for Pittsburgh. And we saw that Monday where they got into a little bit of a track meet in the fourth quarter. The Bears, neither team did get to 30 points. That's the magic number. Right, but you saw it a little bit where Ben Roethlisberger was trying to keep up with a rookie quarterback, and the Bears almost got into position for a game-winning field goal at the end. That would have gotten, it would have been a big win at Pittsburgh. My biggest concern for the Steelers is just the firepower on offense. If their defense doesn't have a great day, they're in trouble. Number 5, I put the Bills, the team, one of the favorites that lost this weekend, plus the Steelers, that I would be most concerned about. The Bills, I put number 5. Ahead of the Cowboys, Packers, Rams, because for the Bills, they have not a very good offensive line. They have no run game. Their whole offense revolves around Josh Allen. Josh Allen and Stephon Diggs. And what happened on Sunday against Jacksonville? Josh Allen was not good. He had 4 turnovers. They had 6 points. They had almost as many turnovers as points. And so that's where it's a little bit of a blueprint on the Bills. Right, for the Steelers, a little bit of a blueprint. You know, for the Steelers, if you score 30 points, you're going to beat them because they can't keep up. For the Bills, if you can get after the quarterback and that offensive line will allow you, right? If you can get after Josh Allen, make things tough on him, he has no run game to rely on. He's got one guy to throw to in Stephon Diggs. They're supposed to get back their tight end, Dawson Knox, but you know he's kind of a 5-10 top tight. He's not a Travis Kelce. And you're relying so much on Josh Allen that can lead to struggles like we saw Sunday. The Jaguars were able to get after Josh Allen. He played poorly. The Bills scored 6 points and lost. Number 6 on this list, from most concerning to least concerning, would be the Dallas Cowboys. Because the Cowboys, they too are programmed to win a certain way. Their defense is much better with a lead. That's when you can have Diggs, you know, ball hawk. Diggs got torched by the Broncos on Sunday. He's actually allowed the second most yards of any defensive back this year. But he also has the most interceptions, right? So he's one of those, he'll take some chances, he's going to get burned, but you'll take a couple of big receptions he allows if he's going to give you a turnover at some point or even a defensive touchdown. But when the Cowboys are trailing, their run defense isn't nearly as good. They're not as physical of a team. So when the Cowboys are trailing and their opponent can then keep it on the ground, that doesn't bode well for Dallas. Dallas, their defense is much better when they can play with a lead, and they can come after the quarterback, and they can try to bait you into making some mistakes, and they can intercept the football, and you have to throw it instead of running. The problem is why I put the Cowboys only 6 on this list in terms of was that an outlier or a blueprint. The problem is you may know how to beat the Cowboys, but can you actually accomplish it? And the way you do it is you're going to have to hold that Cowboys offense down so that you can take a lead. That's what the Broncos did. The Cowboys in that first half were terrible. It was Dak Prescott's worst half of football, and they were able to build a lead. And then the Broncos can just run the football, take it easy. And on the flip side for the Cowboys, of course, you turn them one-sided, you know they have to throw. They're missing their left tackle, and you can exploit that. But how many teams can actually do that? The Broncos have a good defense. It hasn't been often that the Cowboys' offense with a healthy Dak Prescott has been slowed down. So how much should you really worry about that? Plus, Dak was coming off of a layoff. Maybe he was just a little rusty. That's the way you beat the Cowboys, is you have to slow down that offense. It changes their whole style. But the concern is how many teams could realistically slow down that offense. We'll find out moving forward. Maybe the Broncos did release some sort of blueprint, but their defense was good enough, and Teddy Bridgewater played well enough that they could jump out to that early lead. And then once you get that lead, you can kind of cruise. Number 7 on the list is the Packers. And for the Packers, of course, they didn't have Aaron Rodgers. So, you know, that's the big disclaimer with their loss to the Chiefs on Sunday. And the Chiefs were favorites, but the Packers were that better team that did lose to Kansas City. But the Packers, for them, it's real simple. I only put them 7 on the list because it's obvious. The blueprint, the concern is simply they need Aaron Rodgers. And we've known that for a decade. Without Aaron Rodgers, the Packers organization is a 500 team, if that. With Aaron Rodgers, they're Super Bowl contenders. That's how valuable and how good he is. And it's funny that he seems to keep it all together, because without Aaron Rodgers, suddenly the special teams were terrible on Sunday for Green Bay, right? They're missing field goals. They're getting a kick blocked. And it's like when Aaron Rodgers disappears and the whole operation is in shambles for the Packers. That's why I only put them 7th on the list, because with Aaron Rodgers, I think they're fine. But when you remove Aaron Rodgers, then the Packers are in big trouble. He's supposed to be back on Sunday, and unless he gets injured, you imagine you can count on him, even though he's not vaccinated. You know, maybe, who knows, maybe something happens, although he just got COVID. I don't think you have to worry about this the rest of the season, but you never know. But as long as he's out there, you're fine. The blueprint for Green Bay, yeah, go up against Jordan Love instead of Aaron Rodgers, and you'll beat them a lot easier than if you have to worry about Aaron Rodgers. And lastly, I put the Rams at number 8, meaning they're the team that I'm the least concerned about coming out of this weekend. Because I think they still have plenty of, they still have the talent, one of the best rosters in the NFL. But also, if you watch that game on Sunday, they beat themselves. And it was with interceptions from Matt Stafford. Now, this could be hard to change. But for Matt Stafford, the Rams will be successful if he plays within himself and takes care of the football. The Rams will struggle if he tries to be Superman like he was Sunday. And I think he has a little bit of a superhero complex from all his years in Detroit, where he feels like he has to be the guy. He has to make those plays. You know, a lot of times we can be conditioned as humans. I think of the movie Instant Family, and it's a nice movie. You know, but it has a happy ending. If you've seen it before, with Mark Wahlberg, came out, I don't know, the last decade. But the idea is they adopt a family, and these kids had a tough upbringing, and so the oldest daughter is really tough on Mark Wahlberg and his wife in the movie. You know, because she's conditioned that they've bounced around from foster family to foster family, and her mother was never around. She had to take care of her younger siblings, so she doesn't let her new foster parents, Mark Wahlberg, right? She kind of keeps them at a distance. She's the one that's trying to be the mother to her siblings. Point being, you know, you can be conditioned. It can be hard to get those habits out of people when you spend your whole life or career doing something. Stafford has spent his whole football career in the NFL having to be that superhero. Now suddenly he gets to the Rams. They have enough talent where McVay can tell him, like, hey, you don't have to do all this. Take the sack. Throw it away. We got a good enough team. We'll be able to bounce back. But we can't bounce back when you're giving the other team 21 points on turnovers. That's too hard to overcome. So I think it could be an easy change unless Stafford is just too conditioned that this is who he is and he can't be more conservative. I believe he will learn from those mistakes on Sunday. He will play smarter moving forward, and that's why I put the Rams at number 8. They lost the game. They didn't play great, but I think their big issue Sunday night and moving forward is just making sure Stafford plays within himself and the team. Don't go out there and try to do too much. You don't have to. This is not Detroit anymore. You got a lot of talent around you, right? Let your teammates help you win the game instead of trying to throw it, you know, while you're getting sacked, twisted around, throw it up in air for a pick 6. And that's how I would order some of these surprises this past weekend, in terms of whether those teams are actually exposed or not. How concerned would I be about the Cowboys after that loss? How concerned should you be about the Packers after that loss, the Bills, the Rams? Well, we just ran through it. That's how I would order them and what concerns me about each team. We'll wrap up hour two when we come back. It's the Morrow Midday Show here on ESPN Radio.
Spend lunch with Luke.
Attention campers, lunch has been canceled today due to lack of hustle. Deal with it.
On the Morrow Midday Show.
It's the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. You can always text the show, 843-608-1734. On the text line, somebody asked, how about Sam Darnold? Out for 7 weeks with a fracture in his shoulder. Yeah, not good. Makes the decision for Matt Rhule. Now you have to see what you get from P.J. Walker. They sign Matt Barkley. Like, Sam Darnold's not the quarterback of the future, but we'll find out if he's the best quarterback on the roster. I mean, you can't play much worse than Barkley Darnold has lately. But P.J. Walker's not a franchise quarterback either. But maybe you got a Mike White situation here. Maybe P.J. will come out and play really well. So that's tough for Sam Darnold. And for the Panthers, maybe it is addition by subtraction. You can't get much worse. In fact, I saw this from CBS Sports. Sam Darnold has thrown 160 passes over the last five games. 373 quarterbacks have thrown at least that many passes in a season over the last decade. All right, 373 quarterbacks have thrown at least as many passes as Darnold has this year in the last decade. Of those quarterbacks, Sam Darnold would be second to last in yards per attempt, third to last in touchdown percentage, fourth to last in interception percentage. So over the past decade, point being, Darnold's five-game stretch here is probably bottom three in the past decade. That's how bad he has been. Literally couldn't get much worse. So for the Panthers, I guess that's how you have to look at it. Darnold's hurt? Well, I mean, it can't get much worse. Let's see if P.J. Walker's any better. And for Sam Darnold, it's funny. He replaces Teddy Bridgewater in Carolina. Now he kind of has to hope to be Bridgewater. Bridgewater went to Carolina. It didn't work out, and the Broncos gave him a chance, and now it's working out better there. I mean, he's still not great, but he's playing fine. For Darnold, that has to be the hope. He goes to Carolina, doesn't work out. He has to hope someone else is going to give him a chance to be a starter elsewhere. But I don't know if you get three chances to be a starting quarterback in the NFL like that. Darnold so far has failed his first two opportunities. Now he's out for about 2 months. 843-721-9500 to join the conversation. Let's go to the phone. Sam is with us. Sam, what's going on? How are you?
You know what tomorrow night is?
What's tomorrow night?
It's always game day at the college.
That's right. The season opener for the College of Charleston against South Carolina State. You going to be there?
Well, yes, sir. I got some great news to share with you, by the way.
Oh, yes, let's hear.
So this year I am now celebrating my 11th year with the basketball team.
11th year. Well, good for you. That's great. So you must be excited to begin tomorrow night.
Yeah, I'm a bit nervous about tomorrow night, though.
Yeah?
I'm a bit nervous about the crowds, you know, like in social interactions kind of stuff.
Yeah, I think he'll be fine. You think there's going to be a good crowd on hand tomorrow?
I got to tell you, this is our city.
That's right. Well, you know, for today, let's say it's the Citadel City, right? They just beat Pittsburgh last night. But tomorrow, it can be your city.
So his 11th season will begin on 11-11.
Oh, how about that?
And by the way, it is still our city, guy.
Well, yeah, we'll see. Beat an ACC team. We got tickets by speaking
of
that crowd.
We've done that a few times.
Well, talking this year. If you're worried about the crowd, Sam, well, sorry, we're not going to help you because we got tickets to give away, and we'll do it coming up next hour. Give away some tickets for that home opener for College of Charleston tomorrow against South Carolina State. When we come back, we'll start to preview the Gamecocks game Saturday with Missouri. It's the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.